This show is for the sales leader who knows they have a pivotal role in driving outstanding sales results. Getting hired or promoted to manage a sales team is a big accomplishment, but you know you have to work hard to become a great sales leader. You are listening to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. Here's your host, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders from around the world, Matt McDarby.
Hello and welcome to the Divine Comedy of Sales podcast. I'm Matt McDarby, veteran seller, leader, coach, and advisor to elite sales leaders all over the world. I'm so excited to have you listening. In our latest season of interview episodes, I'm going to be asking some of the same questions about lessons learned, some of the great challenges that the leaders I'm interviewing have overcome. Who did they learn from? But there's one important question that I'm adding to the mix, and it's essentially, what are the most important parts of your system? And this is my way of bringing systems thinking, which has been a recurring theme of the last several episodes, into our conversations with highly effective and successful sales leaders. Why am I doing that? I'm doing that to help you clarify in your own mind, what are the key elements in your system? What does your sales leader's operating system look like? I'm really excited to have you listening in on these conversations. So I hope you love this season of interviews. Our very next guest is coming up right now. I met my next guest roughly 18 years ago, believe it or not, when we were both young pups, both selling for Huffwaight, the creators of Spin Selling. Now, prior to Huffwaight, he sold and led teams at SHL, a global HR consulting firm. And after leaving Huffwaight, he dove back into the HR consulting and talent assessment space, working in sales and senior leadership roles at companies like Knightsbridge, CEB, Modern Hire, and now CareerJoy, where he serves in a senior leadership role. Please welcome the lovely and the talented Matt Goff. Matt, welcome to the Divine Comedy of Sales.
Thank you, Matthew. Very pleased to be here. Am I the first Canadian you've had on the podcast?
Are you Canadian?
I'm half Canadian, half British. You probably haven't had a half and a half either.
Well, for those listening, this is our first half British, half Canadian guest. And yes, as a matter of fact, I believe you are the first interview that is north of the border. So welcome. Always, always setting trends, leading, remarkable. So in the interest of time, like I've said with other guests, we've got a lot of wisdom to pull out of your brain. And we're going to do so as efficiently as we can. So if it's okay, I'm just going to dive in and ask you some questions and then see what we can learn from you, okay?
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Okay. All right. So over the last few months on the show, I've been talking about systems thinking. And I clarify it because salespeople hear that and eyes glaze over. I'm not talking about systems thinking in the academic sense. But really what we're talking about is systems thinking in a kind of a real world, making sense of all of the interconnected parts of an organization so that we can diagnose and tune and make the whole system work together to deliver the results that we want. Now, you've been a very successful leader of sales teams and of more like a general manager, senior leadership role for quite some time. What are the most important parts of your system?
Yeah, and I'm going to use the lens, Matt, of coming into a new role like I have done actually in the last 4 or 5 months or so, because I think it's important to distinguish that, because you do have to change a little bit in terms of what you might have done before. So I definitely think it's a blend of an art and science here. And the first component of that to kind of have that successful system, it definitely starts with observation and evaluation. So when you're coming into a new organization, it's important not to make knee-jerk decisions. And I think that, you know, some sales leaders want to get their fingerprints on everything as soon as possible. And I think there's a danger there of doing things too quickly when you haven't gone through your due diligence of observation and evaluation. So one of the first things I want to do is evaluate the sales talent that we have, and don't assume that past behavior is necessarily going to predict future behavior, you know, good or bad, right? Because of previous leadership, previous systems, etc. So you need that evaluation of the sales talent you have. When you're thinking about the market and that your go-to-market strategy, it's important to really look through a lens of realism there as well, because, you know, we have our stretch goals. We, you know, we look at the potential, but we have to be realistic with that based on market conditions, based upon competitors, et cetera, et cetera. And then really help to evaluate that solution fit for your potential clients as well. Because if you haven't done that, then we might be making, you know, quotas and targets based on something that's completely. And then thirdly, and I laugh when you said about the systems and eyes glazing over, et cetera, but now there's a literal and figurative component to the systems there as well. It's like, you know, what's working for us? How do we measure success? You know, what are the efficiencies and effectiveness measures that we have in place? So that kind of whole component there, those three components is, you know, evaluating the talent, looking at the market and the realism there, and then looking at the systems place, because then that helps you answer, do I have the right team in place? Do we have the best process to measure success? And how do we thrive in chaos when we have all those things, you know, coming at us from different angles? Well, so that for me, that the system starts with evaluation and observation of the current sit rep that we have before I make any decisions.
Uh-huh. Good.
So how does that system, you're in the job 3, 6 months, 9 months, a year, you've got a good handle on kind of the fit between what we offer, the alignment between what we offer and what the market actually needs, what our target customers need. You have a good handle on the talent. Maybe you've made some moves there, upgrades, and then you've done what you can to really understand what's working well, what's not, and made some tweaks. You're a year into the job. How does the system change?
Yeah, the system changes. Well, I mean, I'm not saying you set it and forget it, but you have to give it a chance, right? You have to see what is coming in, and you'll think, well, I'm not going to change it after Q1, just in case we've, you know, we just missed our target, something like that. You do have to give it a chance. But at the same time, you're continuously evaluating. You're continuously ensuring that everything is, I don't want to say up to date, but you have best in class of the components that are part of your evaluation process as well. And that could be anything from the tech that you use. That could be anything from the some of the market conditions that are coming into play there as well. So I think it's definitely, you know, you have to give it time, but then you have to be able to make decisions based on some of that evaluation. So I don't think, you know, a bad sales leader or bad leader in general is not someone who makes bad decisions. It's someone who makes no decision, right? So you have to be able to have some decision-making criteria in there and use it when appropriate. But in short, you still have to evaluate the success, but give it some time to play out.
So it sounds like obviously being able to make decisions and not kind of stand pat and make no decisions is critical, but it all sort of hinges on effective diagnostic skill to an extent, doesn't it?
It does. Yes. Yeah. You do have to, you know, have that in place to be able to ensure that the data that you're using, that you're analyzing it correctly and making decisions based upon that. I mean, you have to have different sources of the data there. So yeah, that's incredibly important.
You know, one of the things that I found, and I think that a lot of people listening to the show find challenging, is to diagnose the talent. We're walking into a zone that, you know, quite well, probably better than anyone else that I know, right? In terms of the science of assessing talent and making smart decisions about talent. Share with us, like, are there any sort of key learnings, lessons learned about what it takes to do an effective job of diagnosing your talent, regardless of whether it's a small organization or a large? Like, what are some key principles there that people would really need to know?
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, you mentioned I have a background in industrial psychology, and ultimately part of that is around evaluating competencies and skills for a fit for a certain particular role that you have in mind, for example. But from a, you know, from a sales perspective, there's a diagnostic there potentially before you even hiring someone to ensure that there is a good fit around some of those behaviors that relate to success. So even using a success profile, for example, and using a reputable tool to be able to do that. But that, again, is just a data point. And then you're using, you know, competency-based interviews. You're doing like a cultural fit assessment as well for someone. So having that kind of data on someone is incredibly important. But then when they're in role, then it's about ensuring that they have the, you know, the right onboarding, mentoring process in there. Even for really experienced hires that are coming in who might have 20 years experience in the industry, ensuring that you're setting them up for success is incredibly important as well. So constantly evaluating from a metrics perspective, the elements that are important for the role, whether that's anything from number of proposals to quotes to meetings. And we've all been in the environment where that's been scrutinized and you're making those ratios for how many meetings do we need for proposals to close, to hit quota, hit targets. So now you're evaluating those things at the same time, but also providing a real-time feedback when it comes to some of the behaviors that you know are important for the job itself, for success in the sales job. So it kind of never really stops, to be honest, Matt. It's kind of like you have that at the beginning to ensure you've got the right kind of individual, right talent coming in. But then it's important that you continuously provide feedback and guidance for them moving forward in the
You mentioned kind of pre-hire assess using some sort of a success profile that you've assembled, right? Understanding what is the profile of a person who is succeeding in this role? What does it look like? I've had conversations with leaders, a lot of conversations about expectations in role. What are we trying to achieve? Why does it matter? How are you supposed to go about the work? Mm-hmm. That success profile and expectations, are we talking about the same thing, or are they related somehow? Is there a distinction maybe you could draw between the expectations in the job versus what's in a success profile? Is there anything that's different about those things?
Yeah, I think there is a difference. I mean, the success profile can really, or does really, stop at the types of behavioral traits, propensities, motivational criteria, if you will, that we know are important for the role. But then there are other components of someone's personality or their behavior preference, such as their preference for structure or for how conscientious someone is, comes to deadlines and things like that, that might differ from job to job. And then the actual whole structure around the sales team itself. So you can have that fit profile, but then there's still the component of adaptability to a new environment and a new culture. And then sales leadership or general manager leadership has to be cognizant of that as well, to say that, okay, well, this individual has thrived and flourished in this particular role and previous environment, but let's do our best to ensure that that's the case here, because we're slightly different. Even if it's the same industry, it's still like a different type of culture potentially for that individual to adapt to. So some adapt quicker than others. Some might take a little bit more time to get used to that different type of culture. So I think it's important to distinguish that just because someone has that 95% fit for this profile, that's not a slam dunk, right? That has to, you have to still provide that individual with the guidance, definitely through the important first 90 days in the role. That's critical, the first 90 days for sure.
Which is where we communicate clear expectations, hopefully, and set them up to succeed executing the how, right? Okay, good. No, that's a really helpful distinction, because it can be, sometimes we throw words around that sound like they mean the same thing. In this case, they do not. This profile includes other elements. Okay, good. All right, let me, I'm really curious, you've been in this industry, the kind of a talent assessment and in that space for a while. You also spend time in the sales performance business and HR consulting. What's the most important lesson you've learned so far about leading, I'm going to say leading a team, but specifically a sales team? Really curious about that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a lesson, but it's definitely something that I truly believe in. And that is, and I mentioned earlier on about the evaluation, an observation kind of stage that I think is important. But I think it's you have to get a handle on around hearts and minds, and you have to kind of completely, thoroughly understand the sales team that you have behaviorally as well, and how they're different, how they have their unique propensities for certain components of the job itself. But you really have to kind of get in the trenches, because I truly believe that if you do that early on without being one of my favorite series is Band of Brothers, and I always have the distinction between Captain Sopel and Lieutenant Winters, who becomes Captain, etc., etc. Sopel's making them climb the mountains and up Kurahee and all that kind of stuff, is very military. And I think doing that right off the bat with a team is not the right thing to do, because then you can potentially lose hearts and minds before you ever even have an opportunity for them to flourish under new leadership. So I definitely think that's really important. You provide leadership by example as well, through everything from being an expert in your field to how you interact with customers to how you use systems and procedures, etc. But I think definitely gaining hearts and minds and letting them know that, hey, I'm here to help you do your job. I'm here to remove barriers. I'm here for you to earn more than me, right? Is that kind of that? That's a lot of times salespeople want to ensure that they have from their earnings runway is something that's not going to be affected by new leadership. So I definitely think that first component, it really is getting hearts and minds before anything else.
And understanding them behaviorally. You said earlier that one of the key parts of your system is observation and evaluation. What I've heard over the years with my practice today, but even going back to our time at Huthwaite, is particularly frontline managers buy into the idea that, I really do need to observe, but, right? And there's usually, you know, barriers like time or it's difficult. Or what would you recommend to, let's say I'm a new leader. I hear Matt Goff say, got to have that observation and understand how people are doing the job, to like look at their behavior, really get in there and understand how they're doing the work. But I'm like, I don't know how I make the time for that. Or I think there are barriers. What would you recommend, or what would you want them to understand that would make that sort of observation like possible, practical, realistic?
I mean, I think you have to give them at least 90 days. I mean, that 90 days when you're in the role, because if you are new in the role yourself, you're learning the new culture and everything like that as well. So you're kind of adapting yourself. But I think you have to give it at least 90 days to be able to observe and evaluate as much as you can, get to know those individuals and how they're different from people. So now I have some people in my team, you know, if you're on a one-to-one, there's a little element there of how was your weekend and all those kind of things. And some just want to get straight to it, right? So you're not making any judgments on how people operate in that way. It's more just getting a sense of how they work and then using that to enable me to try to get the best out. So that's kind of like, it's not fixed 90 days, that's it. But it's like, I think it's at least that point.
Understood. Okay.
Before you start making decisions.
So you're saying it's at least that amount of time that's necessary to get a handle on how they work, which includes how they communicate, how they organize, all of it, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, some people smarter than me can probably do it in shorter than that, but that's kind of like how fast my brain works and everything like that. I think that 90 days is, I'm comfortable at that point that I can, so you know what, I've seen what I need to see, or I've heard what I need to hear, and I can make some decisions.
Driving great sales results is hard. Doing it consistently is even harder. There are so many obstacles that can prevent you from becoming the most effective sales leader you can be. Find practical advice you can apply right away by picking up your copy of Matt's book, The Divine Comedy of Sales, at www.divinecomedyofsales.com.
What I infer from the 90 days is I've had a chance to observe, I've gathered evidence more than once. There's enough of a basis for me to say, I think there's a pattern in the way this person does X, because I've seen it enough times. So it's a very common question that gets asked in coaching or development conversations. It starts with, what evidence do you have of? How do you know that, right, that this person is this way? Like, what have you seen? So,
yeah, correct. Just an explanation point on that is that, you know, humans are complex. And that is, I mean, from the study of human behavior, which ultimately, you know, many disciplines of psychology is about, it's fascinating on the one hand, but humans are complex. However, there are trends that will start to appear pretty quickly, right? And then to your point is, once you've observed that and you think, okay, well, that's kind of when you're thinking about future past behavior, predicting future behavior. Like I said, until you've been in there and seen it, you can't necessarily come to the conclusion that's definitely going to be the case. But then once you've been in there and you have, then it's easier then to say, all right, yep, that's definitely a trend that I want to continue or I don't want to continue. And then, do they have the ability to change? Now, are they coachable to that point? I mean, you've had more experience than I have in the sales coaching world. And we know from, you know, that classic four quadrant kind of approach to saying, well, this person is here when it comes to performance, but you know what? That's their ceiling. Even with coaching, they're not necessarily they're not going to be able to make that jump. So that comes into that evaluation process as well.
Okay. Sure. You and I have talked many times over the years about what you do, and we've worked together. So I know that you have, to an extent, I get the sense you love what you do. You love the subject matter, but it's, you know, leading people, I think, also is an area that I think I've found you have some passion. So what do you love most about leading people, leading teams?
That leading teams, yeah. I mean, this is going back to what we're talking about behavior, is that you can have a sales team that they're just all different, right? And they are different personalities, different sense of humors that kind of comes together, you know, to form a dynamic team environment, if you if you get it right. I think in general, one of the things that I love about leading a sales team is the fact that every week can be different. Now, even take to today, for example, I can say, I had a one-to-one where with a new hire, and we're talking about a proposal that they just sent in the second month, a fantastic retail client opportunity that we have. And that was great to hear about early success. Went straight on to a call with someone from the advisory board talking about sales strategy for 2024 and beyond. Straight into a client call, we're starting a fantastic project with the Canadian military, helping spouses to relocate once their military spouse has been posted somewhere else. And the client is so excited to launch the project. And someone on my team who's been leading that engagement, just see the look on her face about how excited she is about that particular project to finally kick off after months of getting to the point where we're about to kick off. And then you're into a call about an RFP that's due. And it's just that variety, right, of all the different things that come into the yin and yang of sales. And if you know. And it's that kind of people with our backgrounds within sales, you just love that kind of, you like being in the trenches, but then you like the kind of strategy stuff as well. So me personally, it's that kind of variety of every week has a little bit of everything in there as well. A few fires to put out every now and again, as we all have, but
yeah,
it's like I said, that's the yin and yang of sales for sure.
Yeah. I think one of the things there, now there's a flip side to that, which is this sort of constant context switching. Right, we're talking about a big client deal. Now we're talking about an internal issue. Now we've got an incentive program. Now we've got to talk about planning for next fiscal year. And so for those listening, that's the flip side of this, that it is a dynamic people leadership in general, but sales leadership, I think, especially dynamic sort of a job, and tons of benefit in the dynamism of the job and being able to just kind of move from one interesting thing to the next to the next. Some people find the context switching exhausting. Right. So there's a flip side to it, but I know what you mean. Right. That is one of the things that fuels me too. I can't imagine, working on a spreadsheet every day of my life, for example. No offense to the accountants listening. I don't imagine there are any of them, but
I agree. And you know what? I mean, you mentioned something that's made me think about, being exhausted. And when we're talking about behaviors, behavior profiles, and being a fit for a role, et cetera, is the fact that if someone comes out as a low fit against a certain profile, it doesn't mean that they can't do it, right? It just means that they have to use a lot of the behaviors that don't come naturally to them and forces them out of their comfort zone. And I'm not fantastic with spreadsheets either. I can do it, but it takes me longer, more concentration. And at the end of the day, I'm kind of exhausted, right? So it's kind of, that's the important, the dynamic there is the fact that, you do have to flip and flop, and there's some things you'll find easier than others. It's just that that point of the leadership is, how do you surround yourself with people who can help me with this, who can become experts for me so I don't have to get into the detail there?
Yeah. I can almost kind of infer the answer to the next question I'm going to ask, but we're going to flip it around. We were just talking about what do you love, but now we're going to talk about what have you found to be most challenging? But what I want you to help us understand is, this aspect of the job is particularly challenging. About leading people, but tell us, what have you done about it? So what springs to mind? What have you found to be the most challenging part of leading people, and what have you done about it?
One of the most challenging components is, and this would depend on your own kind of behavioral makeup, so to speak, is that, so let's take the sales lens first, because that's ultimately the topic at hand here, is that, sales, it's a lot of fun, camaraderie and lots of different things going on, but ultimately it's a performance and a results based. So you have to have that in mind when it comes to making decisions. And there are times when you have to make decisions on some great people, right? And whether you go forward or not. And that's just part and parcel of the role. And it's something that is, that can be a challenge, right? If you're not confrontational, you don't like to actually have those types of tough conversations. So again, you're out of your comfort zone.
Right.
And then you're having a direct influence on the livelihood of people as well. So that's important. And there are times as well that it could be, it's not just people who aren't performing, it can be people who are performing, but they're toxic to an environment. And I remember a project with a law firm and they were actually going through a profiling exercise for a certain level of lawyers from a billable revenue, the amount of time that they spent on certain projects, all these kind of different data components that they were evaluating. And they came up with a profile and they said, that is the profile of a high performer, but their white men in their 50s, and they're just not nice people. And it's kind of like it's important, you know, helping them make decisions about certain components, about how you use that profile and stuff. But it just struck a chord is the fact that you can have high-performing people that just aren't a fit, and you still have to make decisions on that and how you make those decisions as well. Sure. So I think it's just having to make tough decisions. That is definitely, it's not my favorite part of leading a team, because you don't want to get too attached to them. You have to have that detachment. But like I said, if you get into the hearts and minds, then you get into know people. So it's kind of, it's definitely, you have to be prepared to be able to make those decisions.
Yeah. The way I've said it, or the way I've heard it, other people say, and the way I've kind of described to others myself, is like, you spend all of this time rooting for people to be successful, your coach, your cheerleader, right? And then you reach a point where it's evident they're not going to be successful in the role, and you've got to be the one that breaks the news. Now, to the extent that this is not a surprise to them, right? That's a much easier conversation to have, because you've been having conversations about their performance and how they're doing against expectations. That makes it ever so slightly easier, I think. But I can tell you, other than sitting on a tarmac in an Air Canada airplane fuming because we're not leaving Canada, my most emotional days have been those difficult conversations with people who are, they're not going to make it. And I kid Air Canada, of course, they're wonderful, but
don't get me started on Air Canada. Yeah, no, the second part of the question said, like, what do you do about it? And like, I think you have to seek counsel with your own mentors that you have. You can read books and listen to podcasts about that topic at hand and things like that. So it's important as a leader to ensure that you're up to date with best practices and things like that going on. But ultimately, as an individual, you still have to go through with those kinds of decisions and what have you. But yeah, I think having your own mentor, even as a, you know, as a senior leader, is important to that. And that could even be your spouse, or it could be a friend. But it's just you can have those conversations confidentially. But I think that sometimes, you know, we do have our blinkers on, and we kind of having some objectivity from outside is helpful as well. So I think those are ways that how do you prepare for that, or how do you deal with that? Don't be afraid to seek advice and expertise and counsel externally to the industry that you're in.
Sure. And in my personal experience, I've had the benefit of having in some environments, a great HR business partner to sort of talk through. We have to plan the conversation. What will we say? What will we not say? But that is certainly helpful. Ultimately, if I've done my job, if I've been effective at setting clear expectations from the start, and I've been giving feedback regularly, plan, do, review, right? That's an active cycle. Then it does, like I said, takes the edge off those conversations at the end a little bit, but they're just, to your point, they're not easy.
Unfortunately, I haven't had too many of them, but there has been a few that definitely being pretty close to home as well. And you just have to, deal with it as you can. You can't be necessarily the character in Moneyball who says, you've been traded to San Francisco, here's a number, good luck kind of thing, right? It just doesn't work like that. So.
Yeah, right. All right, Matt, we're coming up on time, and I'm going to ask you one last question, which is really just meant to catch, maybe there's one more gem or nugget in your brain we haven't pulled out just yet. And it's, what else? What else, Matt? What else do we need to know here?
Okay, two, maybe three things. One, and I'm not responsible for this particular quote, but it's definitely something that a quote that I've had part of my philosophy for, I don't say forever, but ever since I've been a leader. And I think all of my team members know this, is don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think we had ourselves, maybe the two of us years and years ago who said that as well. I think Churchill might have said that at one point as well. But it is important, because we're never going to get everything perfect. We're never going to get everything right. But you can't wait for that. You have to make some incremental steps, right? So I love the concept of good to great. But in a way, that sometimes is a barrier, because how do we get to great? And I don't think we can ever get there, because it's a mountain that seems too high. So don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. It is important for me. The second thing is, when I talked about the evaluation of a team from how you invest and understand and observe and evaluate, but I think you also have to be very cognizant of your own style, right? Of your own idiosyncrasies and how they play out with individuals as well. And try to have a level of emotional intelligence with a self-awareness lens. And I think self-awareness is incredibly important of that. I'm sure you've seen many leaders who kind of have a style and think, are they really aware of how they're coming across on there? I think that's incredibly important to be able to do. So yeah, I would say they're the main. I mean, we talked about investing in the team and how you, the hearts and mind components. But yeah, for me, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good, and just be cognizant and self-aware of your own style.
A nice way of tying up what I think has been a really helpful, valuable even, conversation for our audience. So what I'm going to do in a moment is I'm going to kind of play back some of the big ideas from today's conversation and challenge our listeners to think about, okay, we just, based on what we just heard from Matt, how are you going to put this into action? How does this apply to your role when you stop listening to the podcast and get back to work, right? So I'm going to do that in a moment. In the meantime, Matthew, thank you so much. It was wonderful to spend the time with you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be part of the podcast, Matt. I've obviously known you for many years, but a fan of everything that you're doing. So it's a pleasure. So thanks very much for inviting me.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk soon. So glad I had Matt Goff on the show, an old colleague, a friend, known him for a long time. And you know, based on his background, not only where we once worked at Huthwaite many years ago, but his background in sports psychology, no surprise to hear him talking about his approach. And so much of it is about diagnosis, science, or the scientific method. But he said a few things that were really insightful, I think, about his system and how he blends art and science. After all, we are talking about dealing with humans, not objects. And while the data is useful for diagnosing performance opportunities, right, development opportunities, there's more to it than simply that. So he sort of broke down his system into what are the phases he would go through as he starts a new role, starting with observation and evaluation, especially regarding the talent when it comes to a sales team. Then getting an understanding of kind of the go-to-market, but specifically market conditions and the alignment between what we sell and customer needs. Really understanding that at depth is the next sort of big part of his system, the next phase in his approach. And then after that, identifying what's working well and what's not so that we can tune and change appropriately to get the results that we want. And then over time, the system needs to evolve based on what? Based on further diagnosis, right? So really a great view into the mind of somebody who thinks about the science of behavior and behavior change and has spent most of his career in that business. Matt said a few other things though, that I think are really useful to you, to me, as sales leaders, because it forces us to think, well, how do we take that and apply it to our roles? Some of the key lessons learned, obviously, he talked about winning the hearts and minds of your team, understanding them behaviorally, really getting down into the weeds or getting in the trenches, as he put it, to understand how they tick. He also mentioned being cognizant of your own style and how it affects others. And last but not least, a gem that I think is universally true. I've certainly found it to be the case. You can hear it with this podcast and a lot of the work that I've done, which is don't let perfect be the enemy of good. We can't be perfect all the time with our messaging, with our approach, but we sure as heck can work toward excellence. And even if we fall short of that, we'll be very good, right? So don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Take action, but definitely think, analyze, diagnose, plan before you act, but act. So wonderful to have Matt join. Be watching some great developments that he and his team up in Canada are making this year. In our next episode, I'm going to be talking to a phenomenal sales leader with a ton of relevant experience that you're going to really enjoy learning from. And I want to invite you to come back and listen to that next episode. Until then, this is Matt McDarby, author and host of The Divine Comedy of Sales. Thank you very much for joining. Bye-bye for now.